Lecture 3, The Hittite Empire.
Hello, this is our third lecture in the series Ancient Civilizations of Asia Minor. And to catch us up from the past lecture, we closed in the last lecture on the unification of the central portions of the peninsula, the great Anatolian plateau, by the first Hittite kings. And that was a combination of bureaucratic organization and military technology, which assisted in that process. What we wish to do today is to, in this lecture, is to look at the implications of that unification, the creation of the first great Hittite empire. And the Hittites themselves had a fairly fuzzy idea of the early stages of their empire. Most of what we know about this early period, which is often dubbed the Old Kingdom, and that's a modern designation. The Hittites of the time certainly didn't know they were living in the Old Kingdom and probably be quite puzzled if you told them so, that these Hittites rulers of the early period are remembered as the founders of the great Hittite Empire, and these were later written up in accounts dating largely from the 14th and 13th century BC, and in part was an effort by later Hittite emperors to link themselves with the founders of this great empire. And so the historical memory is a bit fuzzy in this earlier period. We do know from these later accounts that there were two kings who preceded the Hittite emperors proper, kings from the city of Kushara, which is somewhere in eastern Anatolia. We're not quite sure where. And it seems that one of these kings by the name of Pitkanish, if we're pronouncing the names correctly, there seems to be a sh rather than an s sound in Hittite names, that he was the first to attempt a unification. He and his son briefly imposed a hegemony. It collapsed, and the hegemony was established perhaps 20, 25 years later by the first king claimed as a Hittite ruler, and that is a man by the name of Labarnas, or perhaps Labarnash, that s having that sh sound at the end. That unification occurred somewhere between 1680 and 1650 BC. And these, again, are very approximate dates. As I say, we're depending very heavily on later accounts. What we are clear is Labarnash, as he's called, he who dwells in a great house or something like that, that he established the sea as the frontiers, as the account puts it. We're not exactly sure how much of Asia Minor he controlled. But he did impose his control on the plateau, that 50%, the central portion of the peninsula. He carried out some important changes, which were to dictate the political and administrative history of the peninsula. Labarnash and his son, who took the name of Hattusilus, and he too was named Labarnash and then changed the name to Hattusilus, which means the man from Hattusas or Hattusas. He built the capital city of Hattusas and changed his name to celebrate that achievement. These first two kings, Labarnas and Hattusilus, established the principles by which the Hittite kings dominate the peninsula. For one, their power rested on chariot armies. I mentioned that earlier, that the Hittites seemed to be among the first to incorporate this new weapon into their armies, the light chariot. That was an extremely expensive weapon. It's not the sort of weapon that one attributes to barbarians who lack the kind of organism, or at least migratory barbarians, who would lack the technological skill to produce such a weapon. Creating a light chariot, which would have, I don't know, an eight-spoked wheel, which would require complicated harnessing, would require four horses to pull it. This is a highly specialized weapon. There's a whole technology behind it. You have a charioteer. You have two fighting men, usually an archer, perhaps a second man. Hittite chariots tend to carry crews of three. Egyptian chariots that are depicted on war memorial reliefs in the great mortuary chapels in Egypt seem to show two men in a team. These weapons require a great deal of training and discipline. Furthermore, there's a whole economic system to support it. And these early Hittite kings apparently gave out estates to the nobles who provided the charioteers. And in a way, they dictated the traditional pattern of landholding and civilization in central Anatolia.